Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Now I'm a union man. Amazed at what I am, I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all with a hell of a shout. It's out, brothers, out, and the rise of the company's fall. Oh, yeah.
Good morning, members and listeners to Radical Radio 3CR. You're listening to the Fire Up MUA, and we're all pretty fired up this week, eh, comrades?
Oh, we are? Oh, yeah. Sorry, David should have told me I was fired up.
You're so fired.
Can you warn me that I'm fired up before you tell everyone that I'm fired up?
You're so fired up that you're shouting into the mics. Calm down, guys. Calm down.
Right, we'll pull back a bit. We are fired up, and we're fired up about a few things.
And we're coming to you live from 3CR in Collingwood, which is...
Don't we always come to them live?
Yeah.
No, we don't. Sometimes we pre-record it because you can't get to them here at 6:30 in the morning.
All right.
I'm surprised he made it this morning. He's still in his pyjamas by the looks of it. I know it doesn't make for good radio.
No, it doesn't.
He is definitely in his pyjamas.
I would like to mention we are coming to you from a Wurundjeri land and pay our respects to their elders past and present. And the First Nations people have always, and their campaigns have always been something the MUA have got proudly behind. And we're doing that next month, Casper, in Sydney.
Yeah, that's right. There's it's the first First Nations, First Peoples, we're calling it, First Peoples conference that the MUA has held, and they've invited First Peoples from all over the world. They're coming from all over, which is fantastic. And it's grown out of, it started sort of with just New Zealand and Australia going to get together, and then the Hawaiians said, yeah, we'll come, and then before you know it, there are people coming from everywhere, remote parts of the world. So that will be...
When is that?
That is on from July the 22nd to the 24th inclusive. And so we do look forward to that. We're sending some members from the Victorian branch. And Dave, you're going to... I'll be on leave, but you're going to represent... as an official, the Victorian branch up there. And
yep. Are you talking about next year or this year?
This year.
July. It's only a couple of weeks away. Yeah. And I just want to mention we're taking two young fellas from Western Port.
And an old fella.
And the old fella is Jim Beggs.
Oh, sorry. Jim Beggs. Sorry.
Second old fella. I thought we were talking about Dave.
No. This is a real old fella. Jim, of course, was the secretary of the WWF in the 50s. He wrote it
20 years.
Wrote a book called Proud to Be a Wharfie. He's now 93.
Wow.
Yeah, an amazing advocate for Indigenous people's rights. He has campaigned hard for a long time, and when I rang up and invited him to the First Nations, First Peoples conference, he was exceptionally excited to be going. So pretty amazing, and we love Jim, and we love the way he campaigns.
Yeah, and he's still as articulate as ever.
He's a lucky man.
He is, and... Both him and Roger Wilson were both in their 90s, but we're talking about Jim at the moment, but they're incredibly articulate, and you sort of feel a bit inferior because they put their words and structure...
Maybe it'll happen to Dave as he ages too. Maybe he'll become articulate.
Aaron, we were trying to be serious.
This conference couldn't have come up at a better time in Victoria, Aaron, with the Yuruk Justice Commission just releasing some of their reports.
Yeah, we saw yesterday, I think it was, on the 1st of July, that report was tabled in the Victorian government. The report is a First Nations-led report and truth-telling exercise for Victoria. It took 4 years. It has a number of volumes and about 100 recommendations, but identifies a lot of incidents in Victoria and the impact of colonisation on First Nations people, everything from mass tragedies and right through up to, I think it calls a number of the events a genocide as well. So it's the first step in the state, I guess, healing from the impacts of colonisation.
I was at the when they finished the Truth Walk. I was at the Parliament steps when that happened. It was very impressive, I'll have to say. There was a huge crowd and they did a smoking ceremony, and then the guy who led that walk spoke, and he was saying that they walked all the way from Portland, from the convincing grounds where it all began. I don't know if people know about the whalers and the... they turn up and then they kill people. And so that's their first meeting. And then they walk across all the different countries in Victoria and to all these different sites. And he goes through the experiences of First Peoples in relation to, but very particular, all these particular places within what we now call Victoria. Interesting. Very, very moving.
It's important that all these... our history is actually recorded, and that's what this is going to do. It's, you know, if you don't record it now, it just gets lost.
Yeah.
So it really does need to be recorded.
To be fair, it's probably been deliberately lost following colonisation, right? Yeah. It's a pretty horrific, some of the stuff there from systematic rapings and mass murders up to genocide is not something that...
I'll get on my soapbox. I've believed for a long time that why we don't teach our Indigenous history in schools is beyond me. Because when I went to school, history was all about what happened from...
Captain Cook's arrival?
Yeah, nothing from before. Well, and I was taught French.
I'll tell you a funny story. When I was a kid at school, the nun got us to one of our questions in one of the little paper we had when I was in primary school was draw a didgeridoo, right? And I drew a didgeridoo, and she corrected it wrong and put a curve on it, saying that I was wrong. And I thought, I went up to her and I went, when you go to nun school, you're pretty.
You'd remember that.
You don't go up to them and tell them you're wrong. But I just was so aggrieved. I had to go up and tell her, no, you're actually wrong. That's not right. You know.
So Thomas Mayo, obviously a proud First Peoples person and MUA leader for the MUA, will be a big part of
that conference.
Big part of that conference. And did you notice that parts of his book? I think it's the letters in the Uluru Statement have been made into a play.
Oh, that's great.
He's one of his books, Dear Son, it's the one where he talks to his young bloke about the history and about the Uluru Statement about your brother and other things, I guess, and experiences of Tom's life is being made into a play, and I think it's being launched in Brisbane.
Awesome.
This year or next, from memory. But
well, a lot of work in a play.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to Thomas, and we look forward to that conference. It's going to be awesome. We're going to move on to a discussion, particularly, it's about decommissioning, but it's in particularly about the Northern Endeavour. The Northern Endeavour is a floating production storage and offloading unit. That has been sitting... around 500 kilometres off the coast of northern Australia in the Timor Sea since about 1999. And it's fallen to pieces, and it's got a really sad history and a classic history of corporations absolutely taking the piss out of Australia and the Australian government letting them do that.
What's in them? What's in it?
It was taking oil out of the area, and ships would come alongside the Northern Endeavour, hook onto it, and the oil would be pumped onto those vessels and off to the...
It's disintegrating, what's happening, what's going into the sea?
Well, that's the problem. So we've got... it's going to be towed to Norway, yet the federal, which is extraordinary, decommission it there.
What do you mean it's going to be towed to Norway?
I don't think it'll make it.
I was going to say,
it's in such poor condition that I'd be surprised if it makes it to Norway.
The MUA and the AWU, we've called on the Minister of Resource, Madeleine King, to to ensure that responsibility for the dismantling of the Northern Endeavour is not unloaded in Norway, but it actually should be done here. Because it's a direct contradiction of the government's policy to build a sovereign decommissioning and green metals industry in under the Future Made in Australia agenda. So they actually came out and said this, the Labor Party, and now they're actually at odds with their own statements and inverted commas policies. So
well, they must be. It must. It's that's so unusual.
Yeah. So we've called on them. Well, it's just so. Anyway, I missed your
cynical comment. Then.
I know I did. I don't know what. Geez, it is early.
It just come from a different voice. I usually hear it from Dave's.
So this shocking. This is a total disgrace. This, and we are fighting hard, and we're putting on a lot of pressure on the Labor Party that doesn't seem to be having any effect. To be truthful, they look to be. Looking like they're going to do it anyway, but
no. But it's you're right. It is at odds to their policy, to their platform, to everything they've said in the past, and it's at odds to their commitment to reduce carbon emissions. It's at odds to their commitment for Australian manufacturing jobs here, because there's, I mean, albeit not manufacturing technically, it'd be pulling it down, but there's recycling plants in Australia. Including some here in Victoria that can handle the waste.
Yeah.
And it should be done. And further to that, and obviously we've got our own motives alongside just doing the right thing for the environment, which is our members set these facilities up, our members maintain these facilities, our members work on these facilities, and our members should be pulling them down and then having them recycled here. It's our responsibility. We've exploited the earth enough with this. It's our responsibility to do it as sustainably and as
so the as government. The government.
Who are the corporations? Who were the corporations?
Woodside was the original owner, along with another company.
And then they sold the trailing liability to some big company who just went broke.
Yeah.
Shockingly.
Well, that tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go broke, declare themselves bankrupt, and then it falls on the Australian government. So, but federal Labor government did say Labor will establish an Australian decommissioning industry. Labor will work with industry to establish shared infrastructure requirements, such as membrane protected yards and vessels to carry out decommissioning, dismantling, and recycling work. So they actually said all that.
And look, that needs to be done here down in Gippsland as well with the decommissioning of all SOs platforms. We need a specialised port with a special membrane to take all that stuff.
Well, we're calling on a terminal to be established in the west.
And in Gippsland.
And in Gippsland. To appease that. So it's not... This is really a disgrace, but the MUA will continue to fight and try and hold the government to account.
We do have members up alongside the Northern Endeavour right now. Bhagwan actually controls a vessel where our members are on board. There's around 30 or 40 divers who are removing all the growth from the bow of the Northern Endeavour to prepare it for transport to Norway, which is just outrageous.
The thing, Paddy made a comment, he said... towing the Northern Endeavour to Norway for this mountain is just not an absurd outsourcing of jobs. It's a 15,000 nautical mile climate contradiction. By the time it gets there, would have burned more fuel hauling the steel across the oceans than it would take to recycle it here at home. So again, there's contradictions everywhere. We're exporting our jobs again to overseas.
Yep.
Well, interestingly enough, you as the MUA are pointing this out. And I'm sure that the majority of Australians would be completely unaware of this.
Yeah.
No, it's like much of our work. When it happens over the horizon, people just forget that it's there or how it works. And that's why it makes often our job quite difficult. But it causes us to be inherently international as well, because it's happening up in the Timor Sea, which I think Howard stole off the Timorese people at some point in history as well, 30 years ago.
Probably 50 years ago.
Yep. And so it's inherently international work, but it's our responsibility. We've exploited it. We've benefited from it. I mean, to be fair, the Australian people haven't benefited greatly.
No.
The government, successive governments have squandered that opportunity. There's a couple of words I wanted to use, but I realised that we're live.
Yeah, we don't get the cut.
So, yeah, as we said, the Northern Endeavour is only the tip of the iceberg. There's actually 3.7 million tonnes of recyclable steel sitting off our shores, including an enormous amount in Bass Strait. This is an industry that's available to Australia. The cost associated and the energy associated with removing the Northern Endeavour from our shores, it just flies in the face of a fantastic opportunity for Australia, you know, to create a recycling industry. They say this steel's all perfect for recycling. And
yeah, it's a green.
Yep.
Green steel.
Could be turned into green steel.
Yep.
So it's a really ridiculous situation. The Australian government need to pull their finger out. And Catherine King.
Madeline King. Yeah.
Is the minister responsible for?
Don't get your kings mixed up.
Is the minister responsible for dealing with this? And the MUA will continue to lobby Ms. King.
And at the same time, we're lobbying the other Ms. King about the strategic fleet, though.
That's it. So that's
really funny, isn't it? They don't even need to change their letterheads.
and you know, this comes down to the bigger, broader discussion around a just transition. And this is a just transition for our members working in the oil and gas industry, moving to recycling and renewable energy.
It goes oil and gas decommissioning, and then we start building the wind towers. And there you go. That is the practical steps for a just transition. All of those skills are transferable. And could be done here and could be done responsibly by Australian regulation.
What should have happened? I mean, we've had all these people raping our land for...
Resources
for umpteen years. And they take it, virtually pay no tax, most of them.
Mm.
Pay no tax. That's it, we're done here. And off they go to the next one.
Yeah.
And just leave the mess behind. I mean... Where's the accountability there?
And notably in the offshore wind industry, the government's actually wisened up a little bit and put into the legislation that these developers need plans to decommission the wind turbines when they need replacing.
And funds available.
Funds available.
Or readily available to be able to be utilised for that.
Just finally on that, there is a levy being built up for the purpose of decommissioning these things. And, of course, the companies like Chevron opposed that levy and lobbied against that levy. But that levy...
Shocking. I mean, this is like that thing about worrying about pennies and you know, the pounds will look after themselves. I mean, Chevron is worried about a levy.
Yeah.
Mm. Instead of making $200 million this year, they might make $180 million, you know.
So that levy,
I think the levy would take them down to about $199 million or something.
It's like 1 cent in.
If all the oil and gas companies contributed to that levy as they're required to, and I believe they haven't all contributed, it would be well over $1 billion now. Plenty of money to get this decommissioning, recycling business. Anyway,
just a bit of the immoral history that you've just been going through.
Absolutely. Yep. So we're gonna go to our first
positive start to the morning, comrades.
Oh yeah.
We're going to go to our first song of the day, and it's about the need to be defiant and the need to fight back. It's one of the two artists that were at the Gladstonebury Festival that were up for investigation for some of their comments on the stage. The first one is by Bob Villain, and it's called We Live Here.
Lovely area before you come here. Lovely.
Free school dinners for the poor. Pizza with a side of misery. Teacher said when I leave, no one here will miss me. Didn't know I was a sinner, but if they say so, well I must be. Big lips, white nose, God knows no one will trust me. Mum don't look like me, but thank God she still loved me. Neighbours called me nigger, told me go back to my own country. Said since we arrived, this place has got so ugly. But this is my fucking country, and it's never been fucking lovely. Town, have a drink and puff your chest out. Not a racist, you're just proud. Why should you be left out? The fear
March, and the knickknacks get a month. We've got the right to vote. I mean, what more could we want? Free to go where I like, if I look like I belong. If not, fuck off. Go on, boy, move along. Remember Stephen Lawrence? He too was free to roam. 18 years old at the bus stop, murdered on his way home. We did in a I was called nigger, I was about 7 or 8 years old. I was playing across the street and one of the older kids called me it. I went home for bath time a little later and asked my mum what it meant. My white mum, she told me it was a bad word. We didn't appear, I've seen it. We live here. We didn't appear, I've seen it, mate. We fucking live here.
Right. Okay, hope you enjoyed that song. There was a sudden finish to it.
Yeah, because
we're running out of time.
We forgot a very strong language warning to round out that song.
But we can, you can probably imagine what it is.
Yeah, back to front.
They're a, they've been around a while, Dave, and you were telling me about this band only a couple of weeks ago about a movie, and that it's hilarious. Can you just elaborate on that?
Robbie's just talking about the second song we're going to play later on, Kneecap, and we have played Kneecap quite a bit on this show, but Kneecap's also the name of their movie, and it's about...
It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's about an Irish rap band who rap in the Irish language, and they're causing a lot of mayhem all over the world because of their strong political stance, particularly in support of the Palestinian situation, because Ireland and Palestine have a lot in common. You know, they've both been...
subject to genocide.
Subject.
And also the English fingerprints.
Yeah. And the funny thing, in the film, one of the lead singers gets done for drugs and he refuses to speak English
in the
police station. No, well, in the police station. Oh, okay. And they bring in an interpreter who ends up, DJ Provi, who is in the band now, but at the time was a teacher. And that's why he wears the balaclava, because he's a teacher. He didn't want to be recognised. And he comes in to interpret for him in Irish, and it's quite hilarious. And then two weeks ago, he was brought into the English court because on a charge of terrorism, and he refused to speak English. And DJ probably sitting beside him, and the judge turns around, do we have an interpreter in the court? Everyone just looked at DJ probably, and he just went, no. So good. We love Kneecap. We love what they're doing. And we'll introduce their song a bit later.
An absolute useless bit of trivia. Amel and the Sniffers have come out in support of their stance at Glastonbury.
Okay.
And they're going to be the support band to AC/DC on their Australian tour coming up in November, December.
You've got tickets, have you, Rob?
I do have a ticket or two, David.
Must be a fortune.
Amy Taylor is the front girl for that band. And they go all right too, so there's a bit of trivia.
I bet they do. All right, we're going to go into a bit of an industrial report. It'll be probably quite brief, but we want to talk a little bit about Aaron being in the commission yesterday.
Yeah, we were in the commission yesterday. The managers at DP World have not put their guns away yet, following the significant industrial dispute we had at the beginning of last year, or that concluded at the beginning of last year. And we're in there today because they're refusing to replace FSE positions for people who leave the business. So that's just, for everyone out there, it's just an upgrade from a person who works on a variable roster to a fixed roster. Just provides predictability, stability, quality of life, those sorts of things to our members.
All those important things.
All those things that are extremely important to every worker. And DP World are saying they want to automate, and their position is that if they automate, they want to make people redundant. It's the only way they can spend $6 billion and find efficiencies, I think, because it's not going to come through productivity or any sort of other tangible benefits by the implementation of their AHT vehicles. So they're trying to say that because they might make people redundant, they're not going to replace people now. Now, the thing is, they've got to go through a process of consultation with us where it is absolutely conceivable that we'll increase the FSE positions because we might want to change the structure of work, and the agreement allows for us, the agreement compels us, without reaching an agreement, to reduce the average weekly hours down to 32. So there is absolutely no way they could say with any certainty, and they couldn't in the commission, that the redundancy, how many redundancies will happen or if they will even happen. So we're in there yesterday, and the commissioner reserved his
judgment.
So we'll await that and then see where we land. But
does that mean that there won't be enough people to do the tasks even before they do their automation?
No, they still have. So the number of people in the situation that we've prescribed wouldn't change. It'd just mean that people move from irregularity to fixed rosters. And so it doesn't even increase the headcount what we're asking from the company. It just gives people a better quality of life. And because DP World is the embodiment of treating an individual as a number and taking any sort of semblance of work-life balance away from them where they can, they've dug their heels in over three positions and they spent possibly thousands of dollars on barristers and lawyers yesterday. I mean, we had our own barrister in there backing in our guys and our members, so it's an important dispute for us, and I think it went well yesterday, but we're just waiting on the commission to provide their decision.
Seems to me that DP World and Cube are the two companies around the country who want to create industrial unrest.
Yeah.
And for really not much reason. I can't get over the deep in Melbourne, so the automated... the automation I want to put in is virtually like a mafia at the back of the trailer, at the back of the crane, and the box will land on it and the way it'll go and there'll be a pinning station. That's not going to improve productivity. They haven't given us any data on how that will improve productivity.
And they're quite open to say that they don't think it will increase productivity.
So
they're seeking efficiencies, which just means cutting heads. And let's call it for what it is. It's just about trying to slash... the union jobs at the terminal. That's all it is. It's not gonna lower their or increase their crane moves per hour. It's not going to make truck turnaround times quicker.
None of that.
It's not gonna do anything other than cut jobs.
And they're also over in
that's their position. Obviously, our view is that if you're going to introduce automation, you can lower the average weekly hours, keep the wages the same. And if anything, increase permanency.
And in the port of Fremantle, they're trying to introduce ship-to-shore cranes where they'll be remotely driven.
Yeah, so the automation is, and we've spoken about it on this show a number of times, but it is right up the East Coast, and now they've introduced Fremantle.
The good side of the DP World story is, though, that our union density is still exceptionally high, and I was privileged to be part of the induction of 10 new people down at DP World last week, and all 10 signed up on the spot. So that continues, and our strength will continue on the waterfront, and we will continue to win the fights and battles against DP World.
Yeah, automation.
It's a little bit like a book I just recently said about people being ideologically committed to inequality.
Yeah.
Dude, absolutely. That's all I like.
It's an ideological commitment, Annie. That's absolutely all it is.
Yep.
And for 10 new people starting at DP World, there was some exits from Patrick's, Robbie.
There was 9... long-serving loyal members of the MUA, and they're also long-serving members of Patrick's, I suppose. But they finished up. They took a redundancy package due to a lack of work there. So those 9 people have now moved on into the twilight years, and we wish them all the best.
The waterfront golden handshake,
and we look forward to awarding them life memberships coming up at the stoppie or if at the life members luncheon later in the year.
Really exciting. We should really quickly report that Spot 4 has left Scotland. I'm sure everybody's seen that through the main media. So our gang on board that vessel.
Who's watching the Legacy Media, mate, when
we've got 3CR
here?
Okay, sorry about that. Well, you heard it first here on 3CR.
It's an exclusive.
Spirit 4 has left Scotland. Our members are on board, so we're pretty stoked about that. And we look forward to seeing it sit alongside in Hobart for 12 months or so.
They've gone from the heat wave to the
next instalment.
Incredibly cold weather here.
Yeah.
Finally, we just want to mention the protest coming up in Canberra, the Converge on Canberra protest in support. It's a protest about putting sanctions on Israel and to support the Palestinian people. We have a monthly stop work meeting where the members get to pass resolutions from the floor. If they're supported, we are required to follow them up. And a motion was passed last week to send a delegation from the Victorian branch to Canberra in support of this protest. So we will be doing that. We hope everybody gets up to Canberra on the 20th of July and supports this protest. It's really important because the genocide continues in the Middle East.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to go to our final song, and it is by Kneecap, which we've already discussed. It's their newest song. It's called Recap. We love
Recap
you.
Recap by Kneecap.
Yep, that's the one.
All right, members, have a great day.
Breaking news to bring you, and that is that counter-terrorism police will investigate the rap trio Kneecap.
Wahi ems a bless, let catch him door rekedes, loiteren kul schwaj, tam so tol roi the rich, unreal the sedition beds, Kneecap give them a frisk, spur on land, no deep, but we know they've got more than this. Grab lava, I'm a stroll to the bank, get me Cammy's money and give her my thanks. We'll call it reparations, but I knock your wank. Try to take my money, but I came and collected it. Out on a volley, you like to think that you're fooling everybody.
But you're not, just like the Aaron Eddie, your career is gonna rot. Her arm for undercut, you hear me, had a smart Kneecap. I recognize your raw, the current guard, the short, I got the right, now it's into the hop. You wally, no maggy, go release a lovely lot. I'm a king, can you beat this, come a giggle, kill my dad. Captain Cold, on the top, pops a little can of rock. Throw the crack, remains a fella from the lower whack. Will they see me tell a lower and a vote?
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.